This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
The following podcast contains a bit of explicit material, but much, much more that is not explicit, just as a percentage. It's Thursday, June 16th, 2022, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca, and I don't want to be your friend anymore if you don't do this. So said President Donald J. Trump to Mike Pence, according to the U.S. House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. This would be Pence deciding for himself, or being pressured to, overturn the results of the election. The committee today heard from two prominent legal voices who, in conservative circles, their word is gold. One was Greg Jacob, the vice president's former lawyer, who talked about how they, the Pence legal team, pored over the argument about any case to be made that Pence could do what Trump was asking him to do. There was but one reference in the Constitution, and Jacob said that might not have been perfect, but it also offered no support for ignoring election results.
We concluded that what you have is a sentence in the Constitution that is inartfully drafted. But the vice president's first instinct when he heard this theory was that there was no way that our framers, who abhorred concentrated power, who had broken away from the tyranny of George III, would ever have put one person, particularly not a person who had a direct interest in the outcome because they were on the ticket for the election, in a role to have decisive impact on the outcome of the election.
Next up was retired federal judge Michael Luttig, as esteemed a conservative jurist as there is. He went further than Jacob as to the ridiculousness of the claims, not sparing his co-panelist in the process.
There was no basis in the Constitution or laws of the United States at all for the theory espoused by Mr. Eastman. At all. None. With all respect to my co-panelist, he said, I believe, in partial response to one of the select committee's questions, that the single sentence in the 12th Amendment was, he thought, inartfully written. That single sentence is not inartfully written. It was pristine clear.
And yes, that was Luttig's rate of speech. I, too, was trying to figure out why Luttig was speaking so haltingly, carefully. I think I know. Luttig is obviously self-conscious about his public presentation. He's also probably self-conscious about his use of filler words, or how he, like most of us, grasp at times to find the right phrase. So he speaks in a way that will look quite, what is the word, pristine on a transcript, but it is hard to attend to in real life. Here's one of the few broadcast interviews, podcast really, I found of him. He was talking to Bill Kristol on his podcast.
We have a denial of the significance of January 6th for our country. And we have a continued war. Really, you know, and I hate to say this, but we have a war going on now over America and over its institutions of democracy.
Luttig's rate of speech there was 75 words per minute. In the hearing, it was 67. For contrast, mine's around 170, 180. It's pretty fast by human standards. On the one hand, the purpose of this hearing was to put on a convincing show, and that's not showmanship. On the other hand, What Luttig had to say was really important, and it tells you a lot about the power of a man of Luttig's stature that they had him testify at all. Here are some of the things he said. I'll say them for him. I would have laid my body across the road before I would have let the vice president overturn the 2020 election on the basis of that historical precedent. And the declaration of Donald Trump as the next president would have plunged America into what I believe would have been tantamount to a revolution within a constitutional crisis in America. And in case you're wondering, oh, everyone says everything's a constitutional crisis, he further said it would have been the first real constitutional crisis. He said that Trump was waging, quote, a war on democracy, and this is why Judge Luttig warned the panel and America that Donald Trump was and is a, quote, clear and present danger to American democracy. On the show today, let's get happy. Who is an elephant? As Bart Simpson once said of an elephant that he named Stampy, he thinks he's people. Only Bart Simpson did not argue his case in front of a 7-judge panel in state court. But first, we are once again joined by Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to President Barack Obama, co-host on Pod Save America, and author of the new book, Battling the Big Lie, How Fox, Facebook, and the MAGA Media Are Destroying America. In this part of the interview, we discuss his critiques of the even non-conservative media and his perception of his place within it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
We're joined once more by Dan Pfeiffer, author of the book Battling the Big Lie, How Fox, Facebook, and the MAGA Media Are Destroying America. Among Pfeiffer's critiques is that in an effort to appear objective, the media will sometimes bend over backwards without actually being fair. Where, meaning we in the media, are so desirous of appearing objective, we allow ourselves to be worked by the refs. But now, I wonder, in 2022, there's this huge controversy about throwing objectivity overboard. I could cite Wesley Lowery, academics. Objectivity is being looked at in a new way that says all it's really doing is entrenching power. So I asked Pfeiffer if, from where he's sitting, he thinks this is a salubrious trend for the media and the public, or if he thinks this can get all of us into a lot of trouble.
I think their transparency is what is in order here. Everyone has biases. Every individual person, every organization. Journalism as an industry has biases towards certain things, right? Like take the example of whether presidents do enough press conferences, right? That is something the press cares a lot about, disproportionately to the rest of the country. Most of the country does not care whether that's good or bad. We can fight about. And they use their power to collectively and individually to push for that outcome that they want. They are constantly suing, I'm not against this, but suing to get more information from the government. Like that is a bias they have. They want that. They are not covering access to government objectively, right? Or neutrally or whatever the right term is. They have an interest in what they think is good and they do it. And so I think so there are two elements of this. I think more transparency about what our values are and what we are arguing for is important. The other thing, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, is the idea that the vast majority of people, Republican and Democrat, will see the collective world of putatively nonpartisan media, or not really putative, but nonpartisan, non-ideological media, as trustworthy, unbiased referees who can call bullshit on what politicians say and hold people accountable. I think that world is gone. And in the history of the United States, there was only a very limited window in which the press played that role and the public accepted that role. It's kind of basically Vietnam till Iraq is basically that world. And then you lost Republicans and you're losing Democrats, and trust in the media is at an all-time low and probably will continue to drop. And it's dropping primarily among Republicans, but also among everyone else as well.
So I want to ask you about the Fox part of it. And, you know, you get a lot of agreement with me about how it often engages in propaganda and how I think you're a little more critical of Fox on the news side. Maybe in 2022, it's a little bit different, but I always found great value in, I thought Wallace had the best Sunday show, for instance. And there are a lot of former Fox journalists from the days you were in the White House who are on, you know, CBS and CNN and CNBC now. So it shows that at least some of their people were credible enough to be with the so-called antidote or credible news sources. But I'm not going to argue that, you know, Fox has these excesses and so often gets things wrong and is part of the, you know, Facebook MAGA constellation. However, I believe, I don't know if you think this, but I'll throw out my thesis. You cannot say that but for Fox, none of this would have happened, or even but for Fox, Donald Trump wouldn't be elected. Because in my theory about it, if there was no Fox, there'd be someone, something, some entity recognizing that a huge portion of America was unserved by what the rest of the media was serving up. And it wasn't just lies. It was things like the salience of immigration as an issue. You don't have to exaggerate a caravan. Fox viewers are just much more interested and concerned about immigration as an issue than MSNBC viewers are. Or you take a question of crime and the protests and defund the police. There are just many, many 100 million or more people who are going to want to see coverage of the destruction of those protests as opposed to the mostly peaceful portion of those protests. So that's my theory, that Fox is mostly serving a business interest. There are many that would do the job exactly like Fox would, and some, like Newsmax, that would probably do it much more incendiarily. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you can never say that, like, this is the one thing that led to this election. I think that whether someone, you know, if the argument is if it wasn't Philip Morris, someone else would have given America cancer. Yeah, that's probably true in this case. But there's sort of a Mobius strip to this, which is Fox responding to the marketplace or is Fox influencing the marketplace? And I think that there is in the pre-Facebook, and I sort of pick the point in time in which Facebook became a powerful news player in information that people got in terms of news is around 2014, so post-2012 election. Before that, Fox really had sort of, and really Roger Ailes himself, because he was making these decisions on what he thought was with the best interests of Republicans, was deciding what his audience saw. Now, and I think this was a real wake-up call for Fox, was when they decided that Trump had lost and they were going to call Arizona for him and they were going to, for like a brief moment, stick by that. And then they came in third in the ratings for that period of time. Fox lost control of it. I think that the Republicans spent a long, long time sowing distrust in the mainstream media. Some of that was, I think, and this is when I talk about the bias, there is a set of issues that, you know, do not get as much coverage in mainstream media, or some that get disproportionate coverage. The media's biases are not just left and right. They are also across the board. Like, why didn't the media tell more stories after 2016 about Black and Hispanic voters who didn't get to vote because of voter suppression or didn't turn out for those reasons, as we did safaris to MAGA diners? But Fox has played, maybe they're the ones who got there first, but they have played an incredibly important role, and I think a very damaging one, in shaping political discourse in this country. You do not have to push COVID vaccine misinformation, right? Just because there is an appetite for it doesn't mean that you are not culpable for sating that appetite in deeply dishonest and dangerous ways on a pretty regular basis.
My general thesis is that Democrats have a news network that's, you know, overwhelmingly aligned with their interests, and that's MSNBC. Republicans have a news network that's overwhelmingly aligned and giving them stories that they want to see, and that's Fox. And I know you talk about the comparisons between the two, but just in terms of my statement there, you like the Democrats a lot more. I haven't voted for a Republican for national office for 20 years. That basically is what's going on. Fox is a reflection, you know, also it's a cause and effect of the Republican Party, but there's the Republican TV station and you have the Democrat TV station. Why wouldn't you have that even if it wasn't Fox?
The difference, I think, between MSNBC and Fox is that, and let's just put, I very specifically dispute comparisons between like Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson.
I do too.
Right? You can be liberal and push liberal points of view, but do it within reality. And you can be, you could do that as a conservative, right? But
well, I'll also interrupt you, and there are different ethics. What Sean Hannity was doing, actively advising the president, I would
yes.
think that if Rachel Maddow was doing it, she'd be suspended or fired.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're advising Joe Biden.
NBC, MSNBC during operates under a set of traditional journalistic rules put in place by NBC News. And you can say whether that's good or bad, but if you like, they would certainly, whatever the left-wing version of great replacement theory is, which is, I mean, that's obviously a thing that does not exist, you could not, that's not something Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes could say at night, but you can say on Fox. And so they're just wholly different entities. And when you trace sort of what Fox has done over the years, their interest is not in conservative policies. Like, that is not what it is. I agree with you that it is business, but it is also political. And politics is good business for Rupert Murdoch, don't get me wrong. And but, you know, if you think about just the way they cover things, is it what is good for the Republican Party? It is not a focus on a set of Republican issues that are good. You remember after the 2012 election, when it became the sort of conventional wisdom that the only way Republicans could ever win an election again was to become, to come out for immigration reform. That we're going to
do. That was the Republican autopsy. They told it to themselves.
And that's what Fox decided too. Rupert Murdoch came out for it publicly. Sean Hannity came out publicly for it. They helped support and covered and very positively cover the original Gang of Eight negotiations that Marco Rubio was for. And then when Eric Cantor lost his primary, who was the House Minority Leader back then, or the House Majority Leader back then, because of immigration, the Fox quickly realized where the politics were and they completely switched. And so this is not immigration is an important issue. There's this underserved population who's not getting enough information about immigration. It is what's good for Republicans, and we're going to try to affect the reality and the issue salience for that group.
Right. That's my thesis, that Fox is the TV branch of the Republican Party, and MSNBC serves a very close purpose. They're not exactly taking orders, but there's a huge overlap in terms of tone, coverage, salience, valence, all that stuff.
One is operating at a much smaller scale, one in MSNBC, obviously, and MSNBC is not spreading disinformation, right? COVID vaccine information, the big lie. Fox was spreading
right,
the big
right.
lie.
Just like the Democratic Party is not spreading misinformation, the Republican Party was.
Right, right. I mean,
they're just avatars of their parties, I would say.
In that world, MSNBC, the Democrats are operating in a way that is within the traditional bounds of normal politics and normal journalism. And one party is not, and that is deeply dangerous. And that party has a much larger megaphone that is helping determine. And then the actions of those players in the right-wing media, Fox included, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, et cetera, is what led to January 6th. Like, that is what happened. And there are all kinds of studies about how if you consume Fox News or right-wing media, you are much more likely to believe conspiracy theories about COVID and therefore not take a vaccine and therefore be at greater risk for death. And that is a very, very dangerous impact.
So I do think that you have, I think I disagree with where you think MSNBC is pitched. For instance, you write, the points of view on Morning Joe are somewhere to Joe Biden's right and somewhere on Mitt Romney's left. Former Republican Governor Biden supporter John Kasich is basically the median Morning Joe viewer. I don't think that that's where Morning Joe is pitched. I think that there's a ton of content that's definitely to Joe Biden's left. I don't think the median Morning Joe viewer voted for John McCain against Joe Biden, for instance.
Well, I think you have to separate two things. What is the ideological conversation? Take it on Morning Joe at any point around deficits, inflation. It is a center to center right economic view. It is Joe Scarborough's view. Now, they are vehemently anti-Trump for sure, which is a very big shift for them from where they were in 2016, to be clear. Like, on the Democratic, you know, network, the avatar of the Democratic Party, you had a show which was where Donald Trump was calling in all the time because of his longtime close personal relationship with some of the hosts. Like, that in an election, right? And so that sort of goes to it. But I also think you can be anti, like, this is part of the problem of the whole conversation, how Trump has shifted the Overton window. Donald Trump is a, and I know a lot of people support him, but he is a deeply dangerous individual. And you watch these hearings and you realize just that he's either one of the most dishonest people to ever walk the face of the planet, or is too dumb to understand that he lost an election and people died because of it. Like, in a normal right. world.
Well, the second interpretation does get him off the hook legally, by the way. Yeah. So I think he's going to go for yes. that.
Either, like, that is his defense, right? I was too dumb to understand I lost the election.
Or, you know, insane. Could be insane. Yeah,
but, like, that is the idea that to hold that view does not make you a Democrat, per se. Right, the fact that Joe Scarborough, a Republican congressman, right. believes that is actually the view of a majority of Americans. There are a whole lot of Republicans. They're not allowed to serve in the Republican Party in elected office anymore if they're not named Mitt Romney. Believe that, like, that is the view of, you know, Bill Kristol, Kellyanne Conway's husband. Like, there is a whole world of that, and because of the polarization and everything else, the view is if you are anti-Trump, that is inherently a liberal or pro-democratic view, and that. I think that sort of brings a level of sort of amoral political analysis to what should be a moral question about the country.
So just want to read you this Zeynep Tufekci quote. She studies viral pathways and also media. And she says, the problem is that when we encounter opposing views in the age and context of social media, it's not like reading them in a newspaper while sitting alone. It's like hearing them from the opposing team while sitting with our fellow fans in a football stadium. Online, we're connected with our communities and we seek approval from our like-minded peers. We bond with our team by yelling at the fans from the other one. As one of those teams, or as, you know, the media arm of one of those teams, do you regret that this is the situation?
As I said earlier, I would love to live in an older media world where there was a powerful, trusted, you know, neutral, objective, whatever term you want to use, media that could call out lies, could work as referees. Like, that's a better world to live. There are downsides to it. We just don't, and there's always been ideological media. There has always been conservative and liberal media. And what has shifted is the sort of the influence of it. And so I wish we lived in a different world. We don't live in that world. I'm not sure we're ever going to live in that world again, certainly in my lifetime. So we want to balance out the cacophony of screaming coming from the right with a progressive perspective that is not often heard. If you got a lot of people, right-wing media that is pushing their content into the world, and it is affecting people who don't, it is drowning out progressive messaging, it is shaping the four corners of the conversation, and we need people to do it on the left, and I'm proud that we do it. I think it's incredibly important, and we need more of it.
So from your answer, I think the way we differ, and you're a politics guy and I'm a media guy, is you say you'd like to live in the old world, so would I. But since we don't, the choice that you've made is to engage with the rules of engagement that we've been given and be the team for the right side. Whereas, you know, my choice is more to, I don't think it's to try to resurrect the old world, but to be aware of that and actually to fight against it a bit. And I don't know if you think that, I don't think that what you're doing is wrong, you know, for what your motivations are. I wonder if you think if enough people in the media were like me, actively against these two teams fighting and yelling at each other and filtering information through their side of the sidelines, more people like me, would that be worse or better for the world if the media had that kind of orientation?
I don't know the answer to that. I presume to tell the media how to do their job. Like, people should fight for what they think is the right thing to do, but I wish the media would fight harder. I think it would be better for the world if more media entities would use the power they have, such as it is, to fight back aggressively against polarization in America, but also authoritarianism in America. And I think that one of the challenges and one of the reasons we're in this situation is perhaps out of some, you know, the importance of this view of objectivity or neutrality and a misunderstanding of how the world was shifting, the right declared war on the traditional media, the war on the very idea of objective truth, and too many in the media covered that war instead of fighting in it. And I think that's partially why we are in a world where we are right now, where the audiences, even for the objective news sources, are overwhelmingly skewing Democratic.
The name of the book is Battling the Big Lie, How Fox, Facebook, and the MAGA Media Are Destroying America. The name of the author is Dan Pfeiffer. Dan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about the Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters, and hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now the spiel. Will the plaintiff please rise? That was Happy. Who is Happy? Well, not her advocates after a court ruling. Listen to this CBS report, not only for information about what I'm talking about, but for the shortest recorded length between a proposed rhetorical question and a smackdown of an answer.
Happy is a 50-year-old Asian elephant living in the Bronx Zoo. But should she also be considered a person? No is the answer New York's top court handed down Tuesday in a landmark animal rights case.
I knew the case was over when the judge refused Happy's request to represent herself. So instead, Happy retained outside counsel, Elizabeth Shine, quoted here raising the question of how much she understands the ruling that Happy is not a human.
It's not only a loss for Happy, but it's a loss for humanity.
Stein exemplifies one trend in Overton window claim making, which incentivizes staking out the wildest positions at almost no cost.
She is no different than a human being because of her autonomy, because of her extraordinary cognitive abilities, and because of the fact that she suffers as a human being does.
Elephants should be treated well. Logical. Because elephants are people. Insane. Except the leap to illogic sometimes works in other contexts, especially if activists are there to vociferously advance the talking point. Also, we should note, two of the seven judges on the New York Court of Appeals did side with Happy. But the other phenomenon that Happy the Elephant epitomizes is lawsuit as legitimacy launderer. There are so many times when a weird or bizarre idea that would otherwise be seen as outlandish is taken somewhat seriously just because someone filed a lawsuit about it. I covered lawyers suing McDonald's for obesity over 10 years ago. The analogy was made to lawsuits against cigarette companies. It was a very, very inexact analogy. It was a crazy lawsuit. It had no chance of winning, but by God, the argument was made more interesting because there was a suit. A temple in Florida the other day, Le Devoir Vador, Generation to Generation, has sued the state's 15-week ban on abortion that takes effect on July 1st on religious grounds. Namely, the Jewish religion, which not only allows, but requires abortion to save the health of the mother. I see so many things wrong with this suit. Laws ban a lot of things that religion allows. Hello, polygamy. And then there is the question of standing. An actual person has to be actually harmed and prevented from practicing religion to win a suit like this, and not just allege that a law would violate religious beliefs. Would it come to pass that a pregnant Jewish woman was denied an abortion despite her health being at stake? The Jewish law, by the way, also has, I think, overly stringent exceptions for health of the pregnant woman. The story, the lawsuit, covered everywhere, and in none of the coverage did I see a professor or some expert quoted on the chance of winning. Because the newsworthiness isn't really the possibility of success, it's that the suit exists at all. I find the lawsuit as legitimizer. It's usually a leftist, progressive, liberal phenomenon. The conservative version generally is state legislator introduces bill. Here's a result of one such measure, supported by 13 Republican members of the New Hampshire State House.
New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu says this week's vote in the New Hampshire House calling for the Granite State to secede from the United States was crazy. The bill, however, did not come close to passing. More than 300 lawmakers voted against it.
The Concord Monitor quoted Representative Tim Smith, D. Manchester, as being against the bill, adding of Smith, he said the bill felt personal for him because he had an ancestor who fought alongside George Washington. Well, it's personal for me because I send my kids to camp in New Hampshire and don't want to pay exorbitant customs fees on top of the already high overnight canoe camping trip charges. I Googled the phrase, state legislator introduces bill. An Ohio state legislator introduced a bill which would require written consent from a man involved with a pregnancy in order for a woman to obtain abortion care. State senator introduces bill to make Bitcoin legal tender in Arizona. After three Ohio schools did away with selecting valedictorians and salutatorians, a state legislator introduced a bill to mandate high schools continue the practice. Louisiana legislator wants to make killing protesters legal. As a little more nuanced than that, but not much. Of course, there have been many times when the outrageous, far-fetched, just designed to get attention ploy actually passes, and times when it is signaling from the left, not the right. But because Republicans are less inclined to want to solve problems through legislating, they like to use the introduction of a bill as a press release. And most media, right and left, are all too happy to play along. Elephant shout out. Mandate valedictorians? That's crazy. Crazy stupid? Crazy smart? Hard to say. I know it's not enhancing our overall societal GPA. The use of credited experts to assess chances of both bills and lawsuits is always welcome. I find myself having to do the work of hunting this down more and more. When the gymnasts who were abused by Larry Nassar sued the FBI, I wondered if they had a chance to succeed. Paper after paper, the big ones, didn't really offer a clue. Luckily, I got to the Indianapolis Post, which did quote a professor saying, yes, there's precedent. In the Happy the Elephant case, the Atlantic did quote a professor, Karen Bradshaw, law professor at Arizona State, who notes, quote, Deere do not hire lawyers. It says, but if Deere did hire lawyers, they'd be able to claim that under the logic of the law of property, they should own their habitats because they market. Well, if that's precedent, I'm going to pee all around the most coveted lots in Manhattan. If Deer could hire lawyers, I love it. It's a New Yorker cartoon come to life. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, look into my client's soulful, doe-like eyes. Is this the face of criminal negligence, I ask you? Objection! Your client has a duty to intervene and just stood there like a deer in headlights. No, I object. That's extremely insensitive to the deer community and others of our elk. How dare you? My client did not intentionally inflict you with Lyme disease. It was but a tick. Gentlemen
this is my courtroom, and I won't have this any longer. Lawyers, always in it for the bucks. And this has been Moose Judge.
All right, I've gone down a rabbit hole, which is still different from a manhole as of this recording. At the risk of being sued by an aquatic bird enshrined on Canadian currency, I may be crazy as a loon, but even if there is a suit or a bill, New Hampshire is not a country, Bitcoin is not legal tender, and an elephant's not a person, no matter how small or big. Happy has announced she will appeal to children of all ages. And while she will forgive the justices who did not rule in her favor, she will not forget. And that's it for today's show. Corey Wara, just assistant producer, claims personhood for his snake, but it lacks standing. Joel Patterson, just senior producer, insists the predatory worms he bought are human and is suing for leech of contract. Michelle Pesca, COO of Peachfish Production, believes everything from advanced primates to slithery aquatic creatures are people, and she has filed her claim in the court of Ape Eel. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Oompru, jeepru, doopru, and thanks for listening.